listening to a program produced in 2010 as part of Aloud, a series of dynamic lectures, readings, performances, and discussions that take place in the Mark Taper Auditorium at the historic downtown Central Library in the heart of Los Angeles. These programs are presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles, which supports the Los Angeles Public Library. To learn more about Aloud, please go to our website, www.aloudla.org.
I'd like to introduce two ladies who are keeping the world safe for poetry, as Anne Waldman likes to say. They represent Beyond Baroque and the LA Poetry Festival. Amelie Frank from Beyond Baroque was a 10-year board member with Beyond Baroque and is now part of the new Curators Council. She is a poet and, according to Suzanne, also a lovely person. Suzanne Lummis hardly needs an introduction. You know her. You love her. She's a poet. She's a teacher. She's a troublemaker. She's a, rabble-rouser, Poem noir, poetry noir, is that what we... Yes, she definitely does her best. Ladies and gentlemen, Suzanne Lummis and Amelie Frank.
Good evening.
Good evening. This is the lovely, you can see what a lovely person she actually is, Amelie Frank. Isn't she lovely? She's the embodiment, one of the many embodiments of Beyond Baroque. And I'm one of the many.
I could have been home playing Call of Duty tonight.
Yes, I could have been home making myself a cappuccino, but I'd much rather be here. So we always like to come out at the beginning and just look at our lovely audience. Oh my gosh, aren't they? What an intelligent, such an intelligent, their eyes kind of sparkle with intelligence. Everybody has even a nice haircut tonight. So I like to just sort of see the audience that I will be dealing with, and I'm very excited to be talking to you all tonight. We have many people to thank. We're not going to thank them now. We're going to thank them at the end. So you must wait till the end for the thank yous, which is always a highlight of our evening. Now,
we could do our dedications.
We can do our dedications. We have a serious note, because poetry is large enough to contain serious notes. There's a few people we'd like to dedicate this evening to. I am going to dedicate the evening to a former, newer poet. Many of the newer poets have had spectacular successes. Others of them have had some harrowing adventures. Melissa Rojas went to the Philippines to do social work there, social work on behalf of the people, and she was kidnapped by a violent group, and she had a harrowing, terrifying experience. And she was for a little while among the disappeared, and she was able to escape, and she is now back in Southern California and still a poet. So she is not here with us tonight,
yeah,
but she's recovering. She's recovering and she's getting better.
And for Beyond Baroque's part, tonight we want to remember Lee Sloka, who was one of the workshop participants. Great inspiration, passed away in his sleep last week. And a woman who stood here at this podium last year as a newer poet, God bless her, a woman I love so much, Erica Erdman. And this evening is dedicated to the three of them.
I will be seeing you all later.
All right, poets. Larry Kolker. Yes, but I see only you. Okay, here's the deal. Poets, you have 10 minutes to read your set. Please make good use of it. We will do the introductions, so give us nothing but solid poetry. Folks, turn off your phones and your pagers. Any other hardcore electronics that you've brought with you, I don't want to hear about them. Beyond Baroque, Literary Arts Center of Venice, California, is pleased to bring up... Call of Duty. Pleased to bring up our first poet. Many of you know her. You know her work. And I'm delighted that she is going to be our first reader tonight. Let me speak to you of Dina Hardy. She is originally from New York, the Empire State. She earned degrees from Pratt Art Institute and the Iowa Writers' Workshop, so she's a bit of an underachiever. Her work has appeared or is forthcoming in Black Warrior Review, Florida Review, Smartish Place, Bellingham Review, Southeast Review, and Meridian's Best New Poets Anthology. At the University of Iowa, she was a Maytag Fellow, which means she never had to repair her poetry. And from Stanford University, she received a Stegner Fellowship. She brings a lot to this podium. Please welcome Dina Hardy.
Thank you, Amelie. That was very sweet. Well, at Iowa, I started a poetry series based on an incomplete set of 1947 World Book Encyclopedias. To write a poem, I begin by opening a random volume to a random page, and I use the entries on that page as inspiration. The titles for these poems come from the guide words at the top of the page. I'm going to begin with English Sparrow to Engraving, page 2360. I'm nothing but a monkey-shaped silhouette in this ship's rigging, shanghaied for want of a haircut and quick drink, temporary pleasures. How quickly the locks lengthen, how fast to sober. Not so the finality of the pull of a trapdoor lever, the fall to mattress, not out of kindness. There is no courtesy but towards currency. The figurehead's direction charted by the captain with ancient instruments, dead matter. My orders? Fix the lines etched against sky. Same color as water. Hard to tell where the horizon, where Lot's wife looked back, dissolved. Where seabirds' wings unfold, spars and sails, how quickly the word spread. First paper, thus printing. Credit the Chinese. Pull an impression from wood blocks. Everything backwards until the proof. Compare this capture to the choice of making a pilgrimage, the comfort of a catch-all saint. How strong is my metal, St. Christopher's sheen against my breast? For a brief moment, soaked in salt and sweat, I succumb to seasickness. Across my face, my ghost, most likely to be left in some city with an unfamiliar alphabet, where was home anyway? Were the roots of those related too weak in soil with so few boot prints? Do I say now exile or adventure? Did the rat, the English sparrow? Not a true sparrow, a dull-colored bird carried from continent to another, caught in the crow's nest, some twigs, spotted eggs, these birds, these vermin, the hazards of travel, of easy transport, of open ports. This is how disease spreads, how songbirds gone, how pests, how all that's left is a short, shrill chirp. Not pleasant to hear. Eucharist to Euphemism, page 2402. To speak well of the devil, remember him, a small man without a lawful wife, a ruler during a reign of frivolity and extravagance, is to call him Old Nick, Old Harry, or the Old Boy. Fear and folklore had him confused with one who feeds on the blood of the living, a sucker, never a fool. He was the joker in a game of euchre, trumped all tricks, had an active imagination which grew to lies as long as the largest stream in Western Asia, a difficult crossing. Speak well of the unpleasant, the offensive, ugly turns to plain, died to past. At rest, or lost. As in, last summer, I lost my father. Posters on telephone poles couldn't bring him back, like a lost cat, also buried beneath a rose bush. As if he, the father, were ever mine. not after the incident, the accident. He was gone nearly 7 years. Hard to escape, he'd say, placing his wrists together in arrest. Cufflinks. I was a good berth, but nurture also influences my cards. Always bluffing. Nothing more than broken branches, patterns. Can someone tell me what words put the dead to rest? After so much speculation, substitution, such surprise at the directness of a man I passed at the top of a steep hill. He was advanced in age, heavyset, breathless and grasping a street lamp. Not to be overwhelmed. A woman exiting her apartment ignored him. He turned to me, to no one. I do my best to try not to be overwhelmed. Confused, he held tight to the lamp to keep from falling back down the hill. With this next piece, it might help to know that Robert Dinwiddie was the lieutenant governor of Colonial Virginia, and his actions accelerated the start of the French and Indian Wars in the early 1750s. This is Dinwiddie to Diphtheria, page 1996. To build a lifelike diorama, kill the bird first. I grab the bent neck of a swan, arrange artificial foliage and a hand-woven nest. Paint and light complete the illusion of frozen mid-flight along the New River, purportedly the oldest river under thunderbolts. Look through a small opening from a great distance to safely view a total eclipse of the past, a contagious disease in fission on a glass slide, or what's framed in a transparent casket. On display in a department store window, 5 identical girls, 10 identical shoes beneath matching sets of petticoats. Their lives began in incubators, continued on cobbled streets. The hour before midnight, a man passes, raises a lantern to their startled faces, says, "I'm searching for someone honest, actual." He's partially serious. The sun cannot be contained or concealed in a box, cannot become the darkness of an uncharitable sky or your hand over my eyes. If an orange is an orange in a magician's palm and premises are true or false, all birds speak French. Swans are birds, therefore, says the youth, swans speak French and will kill, or should be killed. If you were asked to deliver a letter that would hasten the start of a war, would you take a shortcut or linger in the woods, purposely become lost? Your fever not high exactly, but your pulse rapid as you count and prey upon a chain of poisonous berries plucked from vines at the river's shore. How many swans have to die to prove there's no song at the moment of death? How come I can't stop making false forms, can't tell the difference between a bird and a god? So I've been thinking about the word newer, as in newer poets, and I've decided in my case I'd like to flip it to renew. I've been gone for quite a while between Iowa and Stanford. It's been 4 years, and I just moved back home last night. So, and being here tonight, I feel a bit like a library book in that I'm renewing my time in L.A., and I also feel incredibly renewed to see so many friends. Thank you, Suzanne, as the force behind the Newer Poets series, to Maureen for organizing, to the L.A. Library for hosting us, specifically Justin and Russell. Thank you, Amelie. To Fred Dewey for all he does at the Beyond Baroque community, and a special thanks to you, the audience, for being here, to my husband Alfredo, to Sarah McClay, David St. John, and to all my teachers who helped me get to this point. I'm going to end with one last piece, and this is Glider to Glove, page 3029. The globe maker sands hollow wooden spheres. The first continent, his hand. presses, keeps the globe from rolling as he works. Next, copper engraved with such precision. When cut and pasted on the wood, the map fits perfectly. The globe maker, also farmer, Orchard, Vermont, knows how to shape the earth. Dips a stiff bristled brush into the pot of glue, positions a plate in place. Half the horizon held by the strength of horses in full gallop from maple trees to 91 miles east of Phoenix, Globe, Arizona. Constellations of copper mines. See the root and ruin of people who lived in cliffs. The direction of the earth, glorious revolution. What can't be seen, time and atmosphere. 91 years after the first U.S. globes, the Wright brothers built to solve the problem of balance, glider planes, spruce wood and strong muslin coverings dependent on currents, tow ropes. Connect the planes. One guides the other to cloud, past flat projection distorted by spines of antique serpents, demons in blue. On the surface of the ocean float globe fish, swollen in reaction to danger, poison if eaten raw, but also a pain cure. It's a matter of how the flesh is cut. I follow your instructions, slip your notes in my pocket, navigate your gaze, your eyes, the lighted hemisphere, swim to the island of your iris, the color of a faraway train, a country forgotten after ink on parchment has vanished. I almost wreck. But fishermen in Gloucester are known for their skill, and your directions are good. A sharp eye, a pupil, a dot on the map. I am here. Thank you.
Dina Hardy, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to remind the readers that we have lovely chilled bottled water, and it is free of crude oil, so by all means, help yourself. What's really cool about this is it's got a cup holder, and my car doesn't have a cup holder. This is so cool. Our next poet, Russell Salomon. It's an understatement to say Russell is prolific. I see new work from him every week that he emails out. Pretty magnificent stuff. He's the author of Breeze Hunting poems, Descent into Cleveland, a novel, Wood Smoke and Green Tea, another poetry collection, Ascent from Cleveland, Wild Heart Steel Phoenix, and he has been published in a number of magazines and journals, Passenger, Sunstone, Uncommon Ground, Daybreak, The Listening Eye, St. Petersburg, Russian American Anthology, Peckerwood, and here's a good one, Puckerbrush Review. He was originally born in, I misplaced my notes, it was Yugoslavia. Which part of Yugoslavia?
Serbia now.
A part of Serbia now. It keeps alliances keep shifting. But the nice thing is the quality of Russell's work does not. He originally came from in the United States. He settled in Cleveland, studied at Fenn College, which later became Cleveland State University. And what's neat about that is he ended up getting two diplomas from them when they changed the school's name. So he got away with two diplomas. I met Russell several years ago, not under poetic circumstances, but because he showed up at my desk bearing a box of hot cookies. Somebody had sent him to my desk saying, if you write poetry, you'll want to deliver your cookies over there. They were right, because I got to see his work, and Russell's work blows me away. Some of the most original, inventive imagery, and I think it's important that LA know not only of triumphant returns like Dina Hardy's to California, but of emerging voices like Russell's. Welcome, Russell Salomon.
Thank you. Boy, that was a great introduction. I want to meet that guy. Emerging. Took me 40 years to get newer. But newer is good. This is a delightful group. Much more than the 20 people I was afraid might show up. But I'm used to extinction, anonymity, whatever. But not today. I'm going to get used to this other thing of listeners. So before I get flummoxed, I'll read you the first poem I was planning to read. This is in Wood Smoke and Green Tea, and it's called Red Dress. When I see you in your red dress, I want to become darkness, so that you are aflame as you walk by, and I whisper evening birds into your hair. My eyes are blue now that you call me an ocean. How gray they become as dawn cuts in over eastern mountains. Crows are my syllables, repeating until whole sentences form a new year. You move in air on delicate colors. Sunset undefines your shapes. You set into my eyes like music, and all the colors speak luscious sentences. How green the world is now that you have said it. Last water, first silence. Because you are not time, the word you stops at the edge of the sea in the curl of green breakers. Because you are shadows of night wind searching for escape holes in the dark, you are green under white fingers of the moon. Because you are not space, the centuries do not hold you, even with wars and delicious offers of death. Because you are not light, you bring the sun's buckets of white skulls and let them burn out among the eons. Because you are love, no voice can say your first name, and when I call you by your eyes, you see desert spaces move, move, shadows of deer to the last water and the first silence. And this anthology about Chopin has about 120 poets or whatever, and I have a nocturne in here, and the publisher is here, Maja Trochimczyk. I can actually say it in Polish. That's because I'm a Slavic guy from Berkosovo, Yugoslavia, Serbia, slash political orientation changes every decade. Eternal Nocturne. All day he has been feeling the cool of it in willow trees, on the road past golden wheat fields. Now at the piano, light scuttles under his fingers. He wants tones that leak life, harvested wheat, fresh bread, to the woman who said no, and black butterflies whose shadowy rhythms weep for a form that finds fragments of perfect being, night music, where lost lovers find light. And this is from Ascent into Cleveland. It's really kind of 40 years later after the Ascent into Cleveland happened in the 60s. We were having an interesting poetic time in the 60s there in Cleveland. And this was my 40 years later answer, and here are some poems. That night we slept among star orchards in springtime wind, while bodies snored dark music between thunder rumbling. We spread eye sails on dark sea, traveled by shift of lives to this moment between bluffs. Snow falls on our ears, cold thoughts, small whispers on lips. Shh, the insects will jump off the planet. Slowly sneak the minutes out from under their powerful legs. Take time out in bracelets of river water. Shh, do not wake the sleeping infinities in hands of children. We need the sleep from which a green land comes. This is called Bombs Forgot. He turned the corner and stepped 40 years into the future. Parts of it were missing. In the holes of cities, armies massed bombs. Orchestras stood detained in earlier centuries. He gave out violins that stripped time from ears. Molten fires flowed from fingers. They played time as they would play women. Bombs forgot what they were for. He gave them eyes to see that the past also repeats freedom. He sprinkled free beings along fire roads. He met his own children in the park where music tore holes out of the sky. People jumped into future worlds, inheriting lives they saved, their own. He put forests on mountains where he walked as thin air. I was going to check the minutes, but I'd better take a guess. What place is this before existence? My body is the scent of lilacs. I know you completely. Our lives are suddenly everywhere like a thought of forever green. Move on mountains, concept breath of bay laurel trees. I did not bring the seacoast, but you think crashing waves, and I feel them rush over me. Love is far down there in the music of raindrops. You show me transparent versions of myself in cities not yet thought of, and we are there like sunrise in the sea. Life voices whisper shadows around us like breezes on leaves. We dissolve into each other as if time were gone, but it did not. We are full of real lands, herds of caribou flanked by wolves, white hawks over ice-crusted lakes. I enter you and enter you. We do not exist as dreams. I have a series of poems called Moon Bows, which are real phenomena during the full moon. It makes rainbows at night. They're kind of pale, but the colors are there if you will watch closely. I tested this out with my garden hose. It's really there. So next time it's the full moon out, you can go do a moonbow gardening in your garden. Moonbow 11. We glow inside skins of trees, hands outstretched as branches. Moonlight falls into slow silence, where we wait for time to rise in fast streams of rainwater. The start of light jumps into widening spaces. Darkness breathes sudden puffs of light. Our ships take misty shapes and flow like burnt dust between star nurseries. The origin of life acts like it lives forever. And why not? It knows how fertile it is with life forms, how sure it is with creation of delays. Centuries wait in long lines for attempts at ethics and spiritual laws. The survival lobby, still weak, prays for minds that can see through the mirrors. And Moonbow 13. After billions of full moons, Earth crust settles for only small eruptions of lava and star dreams. The moonbows look like ghost lizards over night clouds. We have been here so long, rain forgets who we are. Each of us is the only version of infinity. Then come laws of nature, universes with gravity, rivers falling from great cliffs, mountains step closer to hear scents of attar, which is rose oil, myrrh, which is a resin from Arabia, pines in whitewater moonlight. I never get tired of you. You are not time, so there is no way to use you up. You wink at me, and I know you mean the starting points of creation when we laughed at the slow speed of light. The touch of your kiss places the exit point on my lips, and we go far flung among stars, weaving from strands of light, new forests on cool valleys, free to call versions of infinity out of sparkling eyes. And the last poem is going to be one of my earliest poems. The first word in it is ate, meaning A-T-E, past tense of have eaten. And it's going to have another word, ergot, which some of you may know is a fungus on grain. It's that black thing. Was a good word to use for the rhythm, you'll see in a moment. To restate, I haven't seen this for 28 years. To restate, 8 cafeterias, 8 knives and forks in use, was served professions, professors, was served words raw, crooked, carved, and for dessert drank desire deep eyes, but could not hold their glances, nor their mine, was served all and left. River, a river, the downhill of dawn, calling bird flight dawn to dawn up, I left calling for cotton candy roses, calling for substance of oats, peas, beans, and ergot barley that grow like river, a river down. River, a river, then a dusty road, I danced, danced up, danced, dust up to wind, to run up a slight fall hill up, blown warm with woman wind, parting from black glare clouds, parting like lust up, with the sun halfway to a sky so high that to reach up would make my hand scoop stars beyond reach of up. And I ran, ran, until the crest of hill broke on an earth far, vast, and warm, and mine. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
Russell Salomon, ladies and gentlemen. He's a tall fellow. Georgia Jones Davis regularly whoops me at Call of Duty. That's all I can say about her. So the rest of it, I'd better stick to the biography. She was born in Los Angeles and raised in New Mexico and California, studied poetry at UCLA under Stephen Yenser. She notes here that Anne Sexton was still alive, but just about to go. Then she took a more than 20-year hiatus from writing poetry while she worked in the news business as a reporter, feature writer, literary critic, and assistant book review editor at the Herald Examiner and the LA Times Book Review. She notes, when I left criticism, poetry came back to me like a long, lost, muddy dog. Her poems have appeared in Sam Hamill's online Poets Against War, West Wind, Voices from the Valley, The California Quarterly, Brevities, The Bicycle Review, the anthology Cherries for Chopin, and her work is about to appear in Poetic Diversity later this year. And she has just completed her first chapbook, Winning Strategies for Call of Duty. Oh, sorry, Blue Poodle. So please welcome a wonderful poet. Beyond Baroque is delighted to have her, Georgia Jones Davis.
I keep thinking I got myself into this, so on we go. Push the button.
Yeah, push it down and go down.
Oh, cool. cool. Okay. Oh, I like this. I love podiums. I love mics. Thank you, Beyond Baroque, LA Poetry Festival, and the Library Aloud series for the honor of reading here. And there are so many amazing friends and family in the audience. Thank you for being my teachers above all. Flowers don't neither. This was going to be a sad, sad movie with death right there in the title, the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. It is the simple man, the outlaw in the big hat, who falls in love with a hooker who hooks your heart. Maybe she was kind and smiled when he handed her the cash. Maybe she kissed him, told him her real name. She likes him. He wants to send her a love letter, but he can't read. He can't write. We meet him in the woods with the other outlaws, Frank James, Charles Ford, Dick Little. Dick's the book smart one, the one propped against a tree, reading maybe a dime novel about Jesse and the gang, but his brow looks wrinkled in a way as if he's reading something pretty. Would you help me write her a love letter? The simple man asks Dick Little, who replies sagely, poetry don't work with whores. At the end, the simple man in the big hat walks his horse on a cold night, his killer's gun hot on his back. He doesn't run. He dies for a betrayal he does not understand. His eyes on a moon with a face forgiving as that girl. Bat Hour, with a little nod to Robert Lowell. I was 5, and we lived on a hill, Paseo de la Loma, at the foot of the Sangre de Cristo Mountains, where night was always a pave of carbon. One evening, I watched the sky with my father, and a strange bird flew over. No bird, he counseled. A bat. Dusk is bat hour. I watched how the creature scratched the surface of the sky with razor-edged wings. Sail, precise as a blade, as if it could slice the stars open like a can opener, and atoms would tumble from them. On nights of the full moon, the sangres gathered like bison. Their great shoulders would ride the horizon, black as a sea, darker than the dark. In bed after 10, I'd listen to the murmurs of grown-ups talk about Nagasaki, Hiroshima, fat man, little boy, about the labs where they worked in Los Alamos, locked up and guarded like Emerald City. And I'd dive under the covers whenever an airplane growled over, afraid, but of what? The dark? The plane falling out of the sky? The bombs I was certain were still in the bellies of those birds? Or the bat and what I sensed it could do? Break up the stars with knives of glass that would rain on me in widening circles of light. Dantean. I would say fate brought me here, Philip Levine. I would say fate brings me here, and I wait, patient as the rest, the overweight, the underweight, the ones in mismatched tops and bottoms, with pierced bellies hanging out, sunburned arms stained with stories. What a crowd, not exactly a sail at Lohmann's, more the newly dead gathered for a ride across the river before paradise or purgatory's operating hours, the leaden-eyed, out of luck, out of gas. The place is decorated for Halloween, orange and black streamers, cardboard hunched cats on the counters, tissue ghosts suspended on wires, maybe the suicides, the ones whose numbers were never called. When will my number be up? B-155. I read poems by Franz Wright, poems about death and resurrection, as the guy next to me, tumbling out of his tight plastic chair, scratches his head, picks his nose. Reading Wright, I half listen to the numbers called in a computerized female voice, an electronic wet dream. She announces the G's, the O's, the C's, where the hell are the B's? But I have to contain my laughter. It's so much misery, so many people with the rage long gone out of their bones, so many half a world away from the mud villages they call home. A man, not old, struggles with a bad hip, leans on the counter in too much agony to walk 3 feet to a chair. Another, shouting about his rights, is escorted out by a cop. A woman, plump as a duck, surrounded by squabbling, feathery babies who cling to her like dandruff, she needs a license to breed. Paradise or purgatory, here is a place full of languages with roots that will never feed each other. Here is the kindergarten version of the Divine Comedy. This poem is going to date me. If I really wanted to be cool like my daughter, I would have written about, you know, the Tokyo Police Club. But hey, I have a long memory. And it's called My 19th Nervous Breakdown. Bring me your retired. You're bored. Lure the ads on daytime TV. Take a last stand against being nobody. Here's your last chance to be born again as a veterinary aide, a motorcycle mechanic, gun runner, Pashtun, poppy grower, rock star. My couch potato dog, who watches daytime TV, has hit the pinnacle of dotage in dog years. She has lost the ambition to reinvent herself as a wolf. But there are days I wake up when I'm driven to turn my dreams on like the TV, when I need a shot at feeling larger than my life. Days I wake up a rolling stone. I hang around till noon in a silk Chinese robe. Then I wrap a silk scarf around my neck and I step out in high heel leather boots and ostrich feathers under a wide Marianne Faithful hat with a silver ring on every finger, and I boogie my way through my own private Ruby Tuesday or Wednesday. Nobody has suspects that I've already crossed the bridge to Babylon. I'm not just an errand-running nobody. I'm this other fantastic creature of the moon just in from Morocco. I get more satisfaction picking up my dry cleaning as a rolling stone. Well, one day it will go away, this atavistic gift from childhood, my imagination's ninth symphony. All the unlived lives will wave bye-bye, disappear down the road with signage that reads, "Stop daydreaming. The strawberry alarm clock has gone off. It's time to pay attention to cholesterol and Medicare, to parents who break apart like rocks of salt, the recipe of their last days spiced with regret." So screw it. I'm turning up the music in the madhouse in my kitchen. I'm Keith weaving guitars with cinnamon and dough. I'm Mick wailing under my thumb and brown sugar to a psychedelic audience of eggplant, peppers, and squash, mellow yellow, deep purple, king crimson, plums and starfruit and tangerines with their own rock and roll dreams of French kissing forbidden juice. I love musicians, and it was an honor to be included in Maya's, I'm not going to say her name, I know I'm going to blow it, because I'm not Serbian or Polish, Maya's wonderful anthology about Chopin, which celebrates his life and his art, and there's so many great local poets represented in this book. This is called Chopin's Sorrow. Sorrow I love more than any woman. Do not run your fingers along my skin, Countess. Touch me only with white gloves, or I will break apart a dissonant chord. Polish, French, man, woman, I speak none of these languages, only that of rain and moonlight. Sex will kill me with its gabardine, greasy trousers, cigars, and gaudy novels, slashed ribbons of arguments and unmade beds. The other night in the Salle Pleyel, the moon, her full face composed, edged close to the window to listen. I kiss her holy white dust. I press my lips to the purity of her bloodless devotion. I'm going to end with the title poem of my first collection. I need to define squadress, which is a hopelessly politically incorrect term. A squadress is a costume that was worn by 1950s white women in the Southwest to show off their Indian jewelry. blue poodle. You are girdled in your mother's Navajo concha belt. Some never solve the equation mom and apple pie. You haven't. True, you said there are times you envy orphans. In your dream last night, your mother leaped or fell into the ocean. You dove in, rescued her, wondered why. At the governor's tea, we modeled mother-daughter squaw dresses, pale pink crepe de chine with silver bric-a-brac flared with crinoline petticoats. How smug and pretty she looked, how they flashed her conchas when she's twirled. You will always be a small, small girl in your mother's eyes. You hoard her Valentine's address to the world's worst Jew, to the little bitch. When you were 7, she bought you a blue poodle for Valentine's Day. The legs moved, the head swiveled. Its tongue was a fleck of bright red flannel, its body trunk soft velveteen, and it was the color of the Santa Fe sky at the first sign of snow. So heavy, the goddamn belt, and the silver conchos, a currency impossible to save or to spend. Full moons that rule warring women, unblinking eyes of the sleepless shark, scalloped blossoms tarnished by years of freezes. Jesus, a perfect fit. Thank you.
Georgia, did you get your flowers from Laurel Ann Bogan?
I did.
You got them? Can you show them to us now? Do you have them with you? Where are those flowers? Where are they? Laurel gives the best flowers. There they are. Let's get them to her. Let's get her her flowers. Sure. Yeah, now is the time, right? Laurel is the greatest flower giver. I just want to study with her just so that when I read at an important event, she'll bring me flowers. Now is the time. What do you think I'm going to say? Something really important is going to happen right now. Okay, this is it. Would all the former newer poets, now seasoned, because you move from being a newer poet to a seasoned poet, would all the former, now seasoned poets stand up, please? They all look at each other to see if, are you going to do it? Are you going to do it? Yay! Look, all over the place, all over the place. Okay. And very, very good. All right, that's always an exciting moment. And I bet there are people in the audience right now who are future newer poets, and they don't even realize it yet. All right, now, what we like to do here, and you've noticed this is already happening, but the six poets that we present are really a kind of interesting cross-section or grab bag of voices going on around the city, and they also reflect something of the voices and the styles going on all over the country, too. So the first of my three voices is David Eddington. David Eddington is so educated. He's so well educated that if there's anything you want to know that you've always wondered about, just ask him. He might know. He might be able to tell you in French because he speaks French. So he's been in a few magazines. Zealous is a magazine that he's been in. He's upcoming in a volume called The Poetry Mystique Inside the Contemporary Poetry Workshop, which I know a little about because I'm the editor of that particular little publication. It's somewhat overdue by about 2 years, but it'll come out. It'll come out. And he was educated as an undergrad in Boston U, and then got his master's degree in comparative literature, of course. In I can't read my handwriting now.
Where? My handwriting.
It's your handwriting. I can't. It's also mine, and I can't read either yours or mine. So okay, we're batting zero right there. He's been studying with me for really many years. And in my class, one of my persona poem class, he developed. Are you going to read some of your North poems? He has an alter persona, sort of a hidden, like an alter ego named North, which he developed in my class in this sort of sly character. It's wonderful to create an alter ego. You can sort of smuggle all the failures of your life into your alter ego and say, it's not me, it's that guy over there. Okay, this is David Edington.
Before I start, I want to thank, obviously, the Aloud Foundation, Beyond Baroque, and the L.A. Poetry Festival for such a wonderful event and for keeping poetry a vibrant force in L.A. I especially want to thank Suzanne for all her help over the years, and thank everybody for coming. This first poem is Clutching Sand. I can explain this. I pour words into the gap you left when you left. Wait. I think we were drawn into each other's orbit, binary for a moment, but ultimately too light. Your velocity took you beyond what we'd amassed. Or perhaps we were linguists, constructing a grammar of us, but while gender and conjugation seemed simple at first, we could never get our words to agree. No, we were conductors, leading an orchestration of ourselves, but differently reading the signature. And measurably, we slipped out of meter. I cannot find the key to this flurry of notes. It's like bad jazz, phrases that will not cohere. I crave conviction like morphine. Isn't there a relationship Rosetta Stone? Some crackerjack decoder ring that substitutes I's for Y's and tells me what you means? I want to be our Galileo. To uncover a truth that makes the birds fly backwards, shifts the center of the universe, and pulls you back to me. Single car accident, Highway 11, 6:30 a.m. The thick cattails seem nervous, a quiver in the slanted light. The parachute balls are bald, their dandelion seeds dither in the itchy air. Fat hen leaves lie scattered, destemmed, bent, or broken. In two tire-wide tracks, salt grass ground into soft earth. The birds gone. Honeybees stumble about, their brass buttons smashed, petals scraped from calyx, and shaken bulrushes still jostle each other. And there, beneath the mule fat, hard and hot, the Ford Fiesta sprawls in a smoke and dust corona, its tender cargo unmoving, dewy. Back up the slope, a stern line of eucalyptus waves along the rising traffic. Stick to the roads. Nothing to see here. This next poem is called The World Inside. It's inspired by a poem by Denise Levertov. The kitchen window darkens to reflect waning light. Sudden shadowing of tenants, the hard slouch written on them, on rutted cushions, and faint on the microwave glass, a shimmer of luminous mist, smudge of TV, summoning castles, atolls, elsewhere. This is Santa Clarita after the fires. Valley after valley, as if some primeval fiend dragged its talons here as it fell from the coastal shelf. 80 years ago, after the gold and copper towns ghosted, before gunsmoke came to Vasquez Rocks, William Mulholland's dam gave out and flushed the canyons clean 54 miles to Ventura and the ocean. We've seeped in, bloomed like thrush in hollows flecked with rust-capped roofs and bone-white stucco. Now, across the 14's eight lanes, vast scabs of sooty earth and blacker scrub proclaim the land finds ways to slough infection. These next two poems are the ones that Suzanne made reference to. It's part of a larger series about this alter ego of mine, North. This is North Departs. Oh, I should mention, these are all written in the same form. It's a form that I came up with. It's 17 lines, 81 words, one word, two words, three words, all the way up to 9 words. Yeah, if you can see from back there, it basically it builds from one word up to 9 words and then back down to one word. Going so soon, asked the host. North nods yes. Tables he's skirted all night titter, full of glances and sidelong chatter. His presence in the foil-papered library fades like breath upon entering a winter hothouse. It's bitter outside. Slope-shouldered, he nods and drifts down brownstone steps. Behind him, the host seals the foyer against the party's waxing tide, remembering how they looked at him, or didn't, when he spoke. What are they saying now that I've left? Nothing good. And this is North at Supper. Scour the counters, not one crumb. A silver sunbeam shines dimly in 60-watt fluorescence, its two slots crisping thick pumpernickel. North watches his pot boil. 3 minutes even, or the yolks don't spread properly. Method matters. Above the steam, glum cupboards conceal his feelings, re-spices. Cinnamon, clove, nutmeg, peppercorn, and pink sea salt. He knows each one's provenance, the sultry histories of fragrant realms. They're all there, shelved behind the dusty phone. Volumes of faraway islands, bright, verdant, dreamt. This next one is it's a bit of light verse, if you will. This is, the foot fetishist is a poet. The dirt licked from her soul tells three truths. What it is, how it came to be here, what it means to him. How we strive to make our detritus speak so clearly. He squeezes all his worldly desire into a pair of leather pumps, just as we shoehorn ours into each precise verse, every measured foot. And I'll close with a poem called Cane Season. Nothing was better than sugar cane season. Every November brought the mountain winds to set us going. We'd untarp the Victor Mill, hitch our mule to the long wooden sweep, and wait. Our fields could be squeezed in a day, but from as far as Los Dolores, neighbors came to Grandpa's juicing machine. Carts limped in, two or three a day, till Señor Cabrera's 58 Chevy Apache, stalks humped high in its bed, finally coughed through clouds of children to our yard. Loaded with clumsy armfuls of batons for father to feed to the toothy rollers, my brothers and I dodged the constant mule. Spent, the used bagasse piled up around us like corpses. Tio Luis would grab buckets of green juice and hurry them to where the women laughed and fussed, boiling the juice down to what mattered, what would last. The day done, men slumped into their cigarettes, splashed some syrup in their rum. We darted around them like flies as Mr. Cabrera roared about land and politics to steal sips of the chokingly sweet syrup when they were done. From the Cortillo kitchen, electric light and goat smoke spilled across the fields. The mule, half loosed, quietly chewed what was left. Thank you.
So the West Coast organization, it's also a national organization, PAN, has a wonderful program where they pair mentees with mentors. And I was the mentor for this next poet coming up. I think I'm still, where are you, Eric? I'm still your mentor. Once a mentor for life, right? You won't fire me. You won't fire me as your mentor, will you? Okay. Her name is Erica Ayon, and she has some fascinating stories to tell. She's working on her first book, her first collection, which involves the memories, her childhood memories of selling oranges with her father. And growing up in Los Angeles, you're a native of Los Angeles, right? Born here, raised here.
I was born in Mexico.
She was born in Mexico. And then what year? When we were five. That's almost as good as being a native, yeah, of Los Angeles. And she is, yeah, she was the 2009 Penn Fellow in the Emerging Voices program. Her collection that she's working on, she calls it a chapbook, but I think this could be a full-length book. And it's called Orange Lady. Erica Ayon.
All right, so just wanted to use it. No apparent reason. Just so I could say I used it in my lifetime. But, before I begin, I do want to say thank you to the LA Poetry Festival, Beyond Baroque, and the Central Library for the Aloud series, and for all my family and friends who are here tonight, which is a lot of them, I hope. And but a special thank you to Suzanne Lummis. She's right. She's going to be my mentor forever. But so, yeah. So good luck, Suzanne. And also to the mixed writers, some of them are in the audience, and my writing group, Olga, she's in the audience, she's one of the members, and to all the poetry teachers like Laura and Bogan who are in the audience, and to all the poets in the audience, thank you for supporting the newer poets. So I'm going to begin with a library poem since we are at the library, and I would like to formally apologize to the library for what I did. So I'm really sorry. So this is called Love Letter to Octavio. Octavio Paz, I did the unspeakable. I tore a poem from one of your poetry books at the library. It was an impulse thing. My library card was in my wallet. I did not care that there were witnesses. The man with the gold-framed glasses in the next aisle. The librarian with the curly bob. I read the poem and felt you were speaking to me. I was a niña in the poem who cried, who prayed, whose skies turned into battlefields. I tore it as a desire to have you, to take you with me. I had never fallen in love with a poet, with a poem, like I fell in love with you that day. You must know, I still have the ripped poem. I keep it in a secret place as if it were a love letter. The year was 1998. I was 16, attending high school in El Sereno, and you were in Mexico dying of cancer. I imagined you overlooking the landscape of Mexico and the way the mountains murmured in the distance. You sipping dark coffee, your wife Marie Jose behind you, her arms holding you like a rebozo, poems circle above your head like crows. Years later, I sent a copy of the book to the library that had been my safe haven in my teens. No return address, just a blue post-it with the words donation, all the pages intact. By that time, I had learned to let go of poetry. I no longer felt like a young girl. I was a woman writing my own poems down before the wind blew them away. And this next poem is inspired by the fact that, well, if you know me, you know that I ride the bus everywhere. And yes, it's LA and I do ride the bus. I know some people are like, what? How does she do that? But I do. And usually to pass the time, I read or write poetry. So some, but not all of my favorite poets make a cameo appearance in this poem. So this poem is called Riding the Bus with Poets. This week, Pablo Neruda sat next to me. He ignored the no smoking sign, pulled out a cigar, blew circles into the air. He whistled at young women. I told him it was inappropriate, referring to the smoking. He said that love has no age and began to whisper sonnets in my ear. Te amo como ciertas cosas oscuras, secretamente entre la sombra y el alma. If it had been someone else, I would have minded. But it was Neruda. No woman can resist Neruda. Last week, John Allman stood in the back. He knew everyone on the bus was a suspect. He leaned over a woman wearing a faded purple tulip-print apron, grocery bags in each hand, and said, I know where you buried your husband. The woman became offended, got up to find another seat. He whispered, everyone has secrets. I'm just paid to find out yours. He handed me his business card in case I ever needed his services and casually walked out the bus. Last month, William Archila grabbed a seat across from me. With a geography book mapped out on his lap, he began to tell stories of El Salvador. In that moment, a soccer ball appeared and spun above our heads. As the ball came towards me, I blinked for a second and found myself in the middle of a vacant lot in Santana, where shirtless boys play soccer, kicked a veil of dust over the sun. The boys' laughter mingled with the sound of cumbias. The scent of ripe melons consumed the air. Silvia Plath boarded late one night. She had dark under-eye circles, her hair disheveled. She took up two seats. In one, she put a backpack that overflowed with torn notebook pages. She scribbled things down on small papers, threw them up in the air. The scraps of paper morphed into white butterflies. As I captured the butterflies with my hands, they turned into bees and swarmed around my fingertips like small yellow flames. I sit in the back, next to the exit sign. Sometimes I stare down at the blank notebook in front of me and wait for the voices to guide me. Sometimes I miss my stop. And this last poem I'm going to read in English and Spanish, because my grandmother, she's in the audience tonight. And it happened that that the reading coincided with her visit here from Mexico. And she doesn't know English, so I wanted her to understand at least one poem that I'm reading tonight. And it's a short poem, so. And the poem is about when we used to visit their farm in Mexico when we were little. And when I say El Guaje, it's the place where the farm is located. And the poem is called Hibiscus Sky. On hot days at El Guaje, we cooled down with homemade strawberry popsicles, raspados in small clear bags Abuelita Andrea freezes. We climb and sit on top of the tree in the front yard. Our feet dangle, our lips turn hibiscus red. Ama and Abuelita relax on the porch, fan their faces with the tips of the blue aprons as they put in out a fire. Their smiles also shine red from the strawberries. We stay on top of the tree until the air no longer feels thick on our skin, until we watch the sky breathe a hue of red like our lips, until everything around us disappears into the night, until we have to climb down in the dark, our feet and hands trust only the tree, a blind landing. Cielos de color Jamaica. En los días calurosos en el Guaje, nos refrescamos con raspados de fresa, en bolsas de plástico que abuelita Andrea congela. Nos subimos y sentamos arriba del árbol del patio de enfrente. Nuestros pies suspendidos en el aire. Nuestros labios se convierten en rojo como la flor jamaica. Ama y abuelita descansan en la entrada de la casa. Se ventilan la cara con las puntas de sus mandilas azules como si estuvieran apagando un fuego. Sus sonrisas también brillan rojo como las fresas. Nos quedamos arriba en el árbol hasta que el aire ya no se siente pesado en nuestra piel. hasta que el cielo respira un tono rojo como nuestros labios, hasta que todo alrededor de nosotros desaparece entre la noche, hasta que tenemos que bajar en la oscuridad. Nuestros pies y nuestras manos solo sienten las raíces del árbol. Descendemos ciegamente.
Thank you to Erica Ayon's audience for coming, her family for coming out and being in the audience. Yay, yay, Erica Ayon's family. Good. All right. So there are a lot of cities who can brag about various things that they have or think they have, but only Los Angeles has Mike the Poet. Manhattan doesn't have Mike the Poet. Florida doesn't, you know. San Francisco doesn't. So Mike Sonson is Mike the Poet. He is an amazing performer. He is an expert in Los Angeles history, Southern California history. He's the only poet selected to read at the Big Picture. He is actually, Mike, where are you? You are actually an L.A. native, aren't you? It says right here in my illegible handwriting that you actually are an L.A. native. And he studied with Mike Davis, so he was a mentor of Mike Davis. He gives tours around Los Angeles. He gives bus tours. You can actually reach him if anybody here wants to go on a bus tour with Mike Sonson, Mike the Poet. You can reach him through the Red Line tours or through the Neon Museum of Art. He also does private tours, so you could have your own private tour. He could take you and show you what all the different landmarks are. Do you ever drive by in your bus El Ali Sal, the Lummis home out there on Avenue 43? Ever gone out that way?
I love Lummis home.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, good. Well, I'm just delighted. All right. This is Mike Sonson.
This poem is titled The Oral Tradition. Poetry started with the oral tradition. Before books, people listened. The word was spoken first. History sung in verse. Bards, griots, Gnostics, troubadours. In the beginning, there was the word. Ancient Sanskrit scribes memorized Vedic texts through chants and mantras, recitations like the Upanishads, assonance and alliteration, soliloquies and monologues. Early Greek poets called rhapsodes told epic tales, including the Iliad. Griots wandered across Western Africa, sharing legends and praise poems. 12th century troubadours traveled town to town, telling tales. Sistina's villanelles tell the tale. The villanelle is a vehicle. Respect to the Italian Renaissance, the source of the sonnet and ballad. Nomadic rhymers are timeless. Elizabethan is Shakespeare. Back to nature like the romantic poets. Get your words worth, cooler than Coleridge. Lyrical ballads, bright stars like John Keats. Mythical like Lord Byron and Shelley. William Blake and the Auguries of Innocence. Metaphysical poets. American transcendentalists. Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson. While we sing in the body electric with Walt Whitman. Fireside poets were gathering families around the fire listening to poetry. The theater of the word. Nomadic rhymers are timeless. Yeats, a heavyweight in the Rhymers Club, Edgar Lee Masters in the Chicago Renaissance, Sandberg, City of Big Shoulders. I'm chilling with William Carlos Williams, or in the wasteland with T.S. Eliot, crossing the bridge with Hart Crane, surrealist, futurist, Dada, W.E. Du Bois in the Smoke King, Langston Hughes in the Harlem Renaissance, Black Mountain poets in projective verse, Beat Generation poet mystics, poetry is an occupation like Neruda, Duende with Federico Garcia Lorca, Kenneth Rexroth in the San Francisco Renaissance, nomadic rhymers are timeless. New York School, cool, Ted Berrigan. Frank O'Hara writing poems on his lunch break. Catching a handshake with Leroy Jones before he became Amiri Baraka. Donnell Lee became Haki Madhubuti. Can't forget Nikki Giovanni, the black arts movement. Cultural movements, academic movements, geographic movements, ideological movements. The word keeps moving. Confessionalists, abstract expressionists, new formalists, lexical integrationists, language poets, household poets, spoken word semiotics. Narrative linguistics, imagist, objectivist, Copper Canyon Press, check the text. Nomadic rhymers are timeless. Warriors of the word, pounding the pavement of time, living their lives through experience outside of the academy. Take it to the concrete. Go prairie troubadour like Vachel Lindsay. Factory windows are always broken. Other windows are let alone. Stream of consciousness. Nomadic rhymers are timeless. Transcontinental tellers of the tale. 12th century troubadours. West African griots. Celtic bards. Egyptian Gnostics. Chanted Buddhist sutras. Spoken word poets and hip-hop MCs. Nomadic rhymers are timeless. Three generations on the same stage, and all the ancestors are on the same page. Poetry started with the oral tradition. Before books, people listened. The word was spoken first. History sung in verse. Bards, griots, Gnostics, troubadours. In the beginning, there was the word. You know what, folks? It's really amazing to be here. I'm very thankful. I'm very grateful. And I've actually literally shown hundreds of people this library on walking tours all the time. So it's beautiful to be performing in here for once, and other than showing a bunch of Australian folks or something. So thank you very much. And I want to thank the Los Angeles Poetry Festival, Suzanne Lummis, Beyond Baroque, and I've always loved this library, and it's beautiful to be here. So this is a poem. This is my ode to Los Angeles authors. This is called LA Authors, okay? Is it the sunshine of the catastrophes, flash floods of the traffic? Something about Los Angeles makes music, makes magic. The muse of Los Angeles makes artists get active. Behold the lore of LA Authors, behold! Who's rocking the populace in the postmodern metropolis? LA Authors. Starting with Charles Fletcher Lummis, sunshine looms large in literary Los Angeles. From the myth of Ramona, Pueblos, California ranchos, Orange Groves in the Arroyo Seco, expatriate artists of the 1890s brought the first sunshine wave of LA authors, and the boosters blew the trumpets on the Golden State's landscape. Sun for 300 days, a cure for old age. Find the fountain of youth in Los Angeles. Hyped up pamphlets let the world know the land of the sunshine, the new Eden. It was manifest destiny. But it wasn't heaven for everybody. Besides the boosters, it was debunkers, socialists, expatriate poets, leftist screenwriters, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Louis Ademec, and Jake Zietlin. Nathaniel West was one of the best. The city in flames in the day of the locust. The underground intelligentsia of artists and authors lived in Echo Park bungalows. McCarthy, he called the Red Hill. And Sinclair yelled, oil! Behold the lore of L.A. authors, behold! And Chandler and Kane were kings of writing noir detective novels in the lost streets of Bunker Hill, where Fonte celebrates staircase fire escapes and lost love. And long before Rodney King, there was the Zoot Suit Riots. The LAPD and the Navy fools fought with the Pachucos in the Sleepy Lagoon, and Kerry McWilliams knew the deal. It was fire factories in the fields. The palm trees are swaying in the wind as the sunset begins. It's twilight on Franklin, and what makes Sammy run? Is it the architectural illusion? Hollywood tycoons in the American dream. Robinson, Jefferson, Langston Hughes. If he hollers, let him go. Get your jazz on Central Avenue. Ray Bradbury wrote Martian Chronicles. And L. Ron Hubbard wrote science fiction into Scientology. And Charles Bukowski, staying in single room occupancies, wrote sublime poetry about the plight of the modern man with a beer can in his hands. And Venice beats off of Abbey. And every time I'm in Venice, Jim Morrison speaks to me. Behold the lore of L.A. authors. Behold! Rocking like rockabilly car clubs. The Carpenters, the Beach Boys, Grease, disco, and roller skating. And singer-songwriters in Laurel Canyon like James Taylor and Joni Mitchell sang the real deal in the Hollywood Hills, basking above Babylon and hedonism before hippie folk maidens became pop rock musicians. And now we're rocking the Rainbow Room like Led Zeppelin, selling platinum, Radio Free Hollywood, Hotel California, the Doobie Brothers. Play the funky music, white boy. Behold the lore of L.A. authors. Behold. And Bret Easton Ellis tells us about gilded youth. They were snorting white rails in Beverly Hills, Less Than Zero, Walter Mosley and Easy Rollins, The Devil in the Blue Dress and Little Richard, and Barry White grew up near Willowbrook, and Motown came out west with the Jacksons, Louis McAdams, Doug Miles. He wrote The Birth of the Cool. James Elroy kept L.A. Confidential, The Black Dahlia, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Magical Realism, Hunter S. Thompson's New Journalism. We're south of No North in the city of courts, reeling in the years in the ecology of fear. Mike Davis and magical urbanism hit like Joan Didion's White Album. Thomas Pynchon to Luis Rodriguez. Thomas Pynchon to Luis Rodriguez. Nell George to Ruben Martinez. Wanda Coleman, Exene Cervenka. Check out the LA sound selectors. Punk rock, pop, underground poets, urban planners, Klein, Soja, Jello, Biafra, Rollins, Ellen, maybe. Spoken word artists got trails blazing. Paul Vangelisti, John Thomas, Lawrence Lipton and the Holy Barbarians. Stuart Perkoff and words are raising roofs like a mic and dim lights. Beyond Baroque and Ginsberg got naked, folks. And welcome to the West Coast Poetry and Jazz Festival. The truth is stranger than fiction. Is surreal living in these conditions? William Gibson, science fiction, cyberpunks on super expressways, ghetto bird copters every day. Hollywood loves the apocalypse. The coast is toast. Earthquakes, flash floods, El Nino, Armageddon, busted bridges. The waves are crashing on the edge of the continent. Is it the city in flames? Or is it Another Day in Paradise? Is it Sunshine or Noir? Baywatch or Blade Runner? Stay tuned for another long, hot summer. Santa Ana warm winds keep blowing, the creative juices keep flowing, and the list of our L.A. authors keeps growing. L.A. authors are making music loud like Sunset Strip, Rock and Roll to Soul, Doors, Van Halen, Motley Crue, Guns N' Roses, Ice Cube, N.W.A., Dr. Dre, Farside, Snoop Dogg, Freestyle Fellowship, hip-hop, metal, bedroom producers, turntablists, and poets. Behold the lore of L.A. authors. Behold the lore of L.A. authors. Behold, behold, behold. Who's rocking the populace in the postmodern metropolis? L.A. authors. This is an amazing audience. It's really great to be here. I'm going to do one more poem, and I actually want to dedicate this poem to my sister and my dad who are here today. So this is for them, you guys. I'm alive in Los Angeles. I'm alive in Los Angeles. I'm alive in Los Angeles. I'm alive in Los Angeles here in the wild, wild west. And as a warm wind hits my face, I walk across stained concrete. I cry tears of joy on Flower Street. I watch families dancing on their porches on Christmas Eve, and I smile widely, and as I move through the city, my heart beats swiftly as sirens speed by me. I revel in the sadness. My soul is deep. I take full responsibility. Give me everything. It hurts. It's so beautiful. We got this universal, soulful, multicultural, emerging worldwide tribe people. I'm alive in Los Angeles. I'm alive in Los Angeles. I'm alive in Los Angeles where there are more angles than isosceles. Citywide topographies undulate across massive landscape. We move from chain link to palatial gates into separate economic states. With rising birth rates below hilltops in the streetscapes, one can barely even equivocate. These fluctuations in rent so evident all across from block to block to block to block to block. Extravagance and adversity interlock. Palatial spots, crosswalks, burrito shops. Housekeepers are hanging out at bus stops. A country club is all walled off and the city's blowing up like a Molotov. Even when I'm in the shower, I'm hearing the horns honk. I'm alive in Los Angeles. I'm alive in Los Angeles. And I'm alive in Los Angeles. And whether I'm listening to Miles Davis or electronic music, I'm moving through the traffic, loving the inner city dynamics. There is mid-city magic, from happiness to tragic, adversity to extravagance, like seeing Korean grandparents moving slowly. While the Catholic school children are crossing fearlessly, I saw a stray dog that looked like Spuds McKenzie by the Belmont Tunnel on 2nd Street, live and direct in the Rampart District. And I'm alive in Los Angeles. I am alive in Los Angeles. We are alive in Los Angeles. And the neon crowns glow above the city of angels. Haze hovers after another nuclear sunset. I love it all. I'm alive in Los Angeles. 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 Thank you very much. Thank you. Love you all. Thank you. Yeah.
I feel
those,
like I'm in Los Angeles.
That's right. I think we should just position Mike outside the library, and he should just talk about all these books, and everybody will just pour into the library and check out all those books. You know who we should thank who hasn't been mentioned yet?
Who?
Poets and writers.
Poets
because
and writers.
I don't even know if the poets are aware, but they're getting money. You're getting money from poets and writers. So yay for poets and writers. They make it possible for poets to get paid. And we want to thank the Library Foundation of Los Angeles. And then what happens? City National Bank, Arndt Fox. That's if you're in standing in a group of people and somebody comes up to you and they say to you collectively, are you Fox? And then you say, no, we aren't Fox. But that's interesting because Arndt Fox is a benefactor for the Los Angeles Library. I guess something like that. And then the Wallace Foundation and
Deloitte without Touche.
Deloitte. And what's this? Buddha Jale Diki Foundation. All of those we thank. Who are we leaving? Oh, Justin Veitch. Yay,
and Louise
Justin.
Steinman.
And Louise Steinman. Louise Steinman. Who are we leaving out? Is there anybody
I've
in the audience?
I've got a list right over
here. Is there
here.
Somebody in the audience who
There's
feels
a list.
We left them out?
It's got
what?
A list.
Okay, let's see what it says. I can't read your handwriting. Okay. Fred Dewey.
Yes.
That's good.
Jerry Garcia and Richard Modiano,
and
the two
Jerry
men
Garcia
who are holding Beyond
Modiano.
Baroque together.
That's right. They're supporting it on their shoulders like Atlas.
Pretty basically what that means is Richard and Jerry basically return all the phone calls.
And they
answer
do
all
everything.
The letters, and they do everything.
They also do origami, too. Okay. Louise Stein. Okay, Justin Veitch.
Terry? Oh, Terry McCarty.
Our benefactor,
he's
Terry McCarty.
He's a benefactor.
Right
he's a benefactor.
Here. Stand
he's
up, Terry. Come on.
Yes,
stand up. Come on, boy.
Okay. Yay.
And
Laurel Ann Bogan.
We want to acknowledge, as always, Laurel Ann Bogan, because so many of Los Angeles's newer poets come from her classes. She
That's
is
true.
One of the most That's important true. Teachers of poetry, not to mention poet in her own right. I think we've covered everything.
We've got, I hope we haven't.
Yeah,
have we
did we leave
anybody?
Any of you out?
Anybody in the front row who feels left out? Anybody
do you,
in the back row?
Larry, do you feel significantly recognized this year, Larry?
He's like almost, yeah, we should just put a spotlight on him.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, everybody.
Thank
Come
you.
Again next year.
Good night.
We have, sign our LA Poetry Festival mailing list. We have a mailing list on the desk out there. And if you sign it, you will always hear from us in Beyond Baroque if we do something interesting.
Aloud Audio is produced by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles and made possible through support provided by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Annenberg Foundation, Righteous Persons Foundation, Errant Fox, City National Bank, Deloitte, K&L Gates, KPMG, Wallace Foundation, the Bujakchi Foundation, Dean Hansel, and Donna and Martin J. Wolfe. Media support provided by KPCC, 83.9 FM, KUSC, 91.5 FM, and KCET. Aloud theme composed by Larry Karish.